Aloha and welcome to the Kauai Death Cafe, Death on the Radio. It's a death positive event. We're here today to soften the approach of how we approach the topic of death, dying, grief rituals, and all the ideas, approaches, and modalities from here at home and around the world. Show topics will range from today's show, The Afterlife, according to Carl Jung, to the practical side of things like paperwork and understanding what happens after you actually die. My name is Jennifer, and I'm in studio with Susan, and we're here to facilitate the discussion, make introductions, and begin to ease into the idea of thinking about something we'll never be ready for, but we can prepare for, our deaths. This is a beginning to ease fears and prepare us for something none of us will ever be ready for. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for a topic you'd like us to cover, please send us an email at kauaideathcafe@gmail.com and follow us at kauaideathcafe on Instagram. You can shoot us a DM there as well. We're not here to endorse, enforce, change your course. We're not doctors, lawyers, or professional counselors or therapists. Please call those folks directly. This show is meant to get us all comfortable with thinking about our deaths, with thinking about a plan for our loved ones after we've departed, and an idea of what we believe. In doing so, we're forced to look upon our lives. When we do this, we leave with a little more thankfulness, a little more love for ourselves, our lives, our loved ones, and what we've accomplished so far in this short period on Earth. Tuned in to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, KCQA Anahola, K205 FM Honolulu, 90.9 FM Hanalei, 91.9 FM island-wide, 88.1 FM Anahola and Moloa'a, 88.9 FM Oahu, streaming worldwide at kkcr.org.
Yeah, but what?
Hello, Susan. Welcome to Kauai Death Cafe. This is Jenna and Susan, and we're in studio today trying to figure out if we can hear our voice through the mic.
Cannot.
I don't hear it either. Dean, come help us. But I think we can hear.
Can you hear your voice?
Yeah.
You can hear your voice.
So today,
your voice, you can hear my voice.
Right? We're going to talk about Carl Jung. J-U-N-G. And we're going to listen to a letter that was written over 80 years ago in 1944 after he suffered cardiac arrest and was in the hospital. And so he came out of the experience of cardiac arrest and had a profound vision and wrote this really long letter. And it's been paraphrased into a small YouTube video that's probably AI, but it has bits and pieces of the letter in it. The letter appears in his book called Memories, Dreams, and Reflections. It's a memoir that he wrote, and it's on pages 289 through 298 if you want to check it out. Or another person wrote it, yeah, for her.
For him.
Jaffe wrote it.
Her first name was with an A?
Yep, A-N-I-E-L-A. Anelia Jaffe. Put together a book of his memoirs, etc. Can you hear Susan coming through the
now
monitor?
I can. I just plugged into a different hole.
We're figuring it out. We got it. Okay, so without further ado, we'll go ahead and listen to this. It's a little video on YouTube about this letter that Carl wrote. So here we go.
This letter is not listed in any archive. It is not quoted in universities. Even those who have dedicated their lives to studying the works of the great psychoanalyst remain silent about it. It surfaces only in hushed conversations behind closed doors, in back rooms, among those unafraid to admit that science does not explain everything. Carl Gustav Jung, the founder of analytical psychology, the author of the concepts of archetypes and the collective unconscious, a man who believed that the soul is not just a poetic metaphor. He experienced clinical death, and what he described after returning does not fit into the standard model of consciousness. In the spring of 1944, Jung was in a hospital. His condition was critical, heart failure. Doctors recorded a cardiac arrest. Several minutes, complete silence. And it was in those minutes, according to Jung himself, that something entirely different began. He did not just lose consciousness. He found himself outside of his body. In a letter addressed to a certain Swiss colleague, whom he refers to only by the initials H.E., Jung describes his journey in detail. This letter was discovered only decades later in a private collection, and only thanks to the grandson of that very H.E., who one day in old age decided to give a copy to a documentarian. Jung wrote, "I was hovering above the earth. Everything that had existed before dissolved. No pain, no fear, no time. I saw a blue sphere, a planet, like in NASA photographs, which did not yet exist at the time. I knew it was Earth, but it seemed distant, alien. I was being drawn further." What came next makes even the most hardened skeptics hold their breath. "I entered a space that cannot be described with words," Jung writes. "It was like an ancient temple, as if carved out of light. It did not glow, it was made of light. And there, I realized that everything I had considered consciousness was only a shadow, just a reflection of the true self." He describes an encounter with a being, not an angel, not a human, but something majestic and intimate at the same time. It did not speak, but thoughts, like streams of warmth, filled Jung with understanding. "I was shown," he wrote, "that life is a school, not only for the personality, but for the soul, that beyond death is not an end, but a gateway. Do you feel it? As if a heavy, dusty door is being slightly opened? Just a little more, and you'll see what lies behind it?" But no. Jung was brought back. He heard the doctor's voice, felt the pressure on his chest. "I didn't want to return," he confessed. And then he adds a phrase that will not let one rest. "What I saw is not a metaphor. It is a reality we are not ready for." So why didn't he share this publicly? Why did he keep it secret? He knew the world would not accept the truth. Not back then, in the 1940s. He, a man of science, could not allow himself to be accused of mysticism. His reputation, his work, his entire life could have been erased by a single confession. In that very letter, which is now kept in a safe in one of the private archives in Basel, Jung shares a thought. "If I had spoken of this then, I would not have been understood. Perhaps they would have considered me insane. But I did not go mad. I saw a truth that terrifies the mind." Do you feel that chill down your spine? This is not just a text. It is someone's confession from the other side. Jung was certain that his experience was not unique. He wrote that thousands of people have gone through something similar, but they did not dare speak of it. He studied ancient myths, patients' dreams, stories of shamans, and he saw the same thing in all of them, references to that very temple of light. He even uses a phrase not found in any of his official books, the space between worlds. What did he mean? A simple metaphor? Or was he speaking of a real place, a kind of zone bordering what we call life and death? One of the most shocking passages in the letter reads as follows. "I saw faces, not familiar to me in this life, but I knew them. They were souls. One was my father. Another, a child I never had. Thoughts became transparent. I was not remembering my biography. I was remembering myself beyond it." He describes this state as absolute recognition. No words, no symbols, only knowledge, infallible, pure. But what happened next is even more mysterious. Jung writes that before his return, he was shown a vision of the future. At first, he did not understand what it was. But later, already in the hospital room, feverishly taking notes, he came to the conclusion that it was an image of humanity many years from now. Oh, and here, attention. He saw that a time would come when the boundary between worlds would become thinner. People would begin to feel more, see more. And in that would be not only liberation, but also danger. When the thin fabric of reality begins to tear, not everyone will be ready. Some will go mad, others will awaken. Does it sound like a prophecy or a warning? Jung knew he should not publish it. He even considered burning the letter, but left it with a condition: let it be read only when the world itself approaches the threshold. And now, nearly 80 years later, we have arrived. But what exactly did he see in that future? What did the world look like? Why did his voice tremble when he described the end of his vision? Do you want to know? From here, it only goes deeper. He did not write directly. He didn't say, "This is how it will be." Jung knew the power of metaphor, but in this letter, he allowed himself a bit more. He described the future as a world of light without shadow, and immediately added, "And where there is no shadow, there is no depth." What did he mean? In his description, the future of humanity resembles a mirror without reflection. Everything is visible, everything is clear, everything is out in the open. People are free, but lost, he says, dot. I saw a world in which death had become transparent, but along with it, something important had vanished. Forgetfulness, pain, suffering, all had been cleansed. But without them, the soul loses its weight. As if he's hinting, pain is part of the path. As if without night, you cannot understand what morning is. And still, there, in that state between lives, he felt peace, perfect, impossible here on earth. He recounts that at some moment he was allowed to ask a question, only one, and he asked, "What is truth?" The answer, as he writes, came not in words, but in a vision. He saw a tree, its roots descending into darkness, its crown in fire. Truth is not knowledge, it is growth. It is pain accepted as a blessing. It is darkness that has become light. Do you feel it? This is not just philosophy. It's like a blow to something deep inside. But Jung was not allowed to stay. He felt again how he was being pulled back. I begged, "Let me stay. There, on earth, everything is wrong. There, fear, pain, confusion." But a voice, quiet yet undeniable, said, "Not yet." And so, he returns. Slowly, painfully, returns to his body. To a hospital room in the year 1944, to the noise and the smell of medicine. But after that, he was never the same. He did not make a sensation out of it. He didn't rush to go public. He understood, each in their own time. But he began to gather symbols, to write between the lines. His later works are full of echoes of that experience. And this letter is like a key, not for everyone, but for those who seek. He ends it with the words, period. When you come there, you won't be asked who you were. You'll be asked, how much did you become yourself? And now, the question is for you. Have you ever wondered who you are, beneath it all? Beneath the roles, the fears, the habits? What will remain when everything external falls away like a husk? Jung saw the answer. He knew. But are you ready to discover what he discovered? After this experience, Jung could no longer live as he did before. He wrote a period. I returned, but a part of me remained there. And sometimes, in the middle of the night, I heard a call. Quiet, like the echo of wind outside the window, but too alive to be a dream. He began searching for confirmation, in alchemy, in ancient Greek mysteries, in Kabbalah. All of this, for him, was an attempt by the ancients to transmit the very same structure he had seen outside the body. But what troubles the most is what he remained silent about. There is only a fleeting mention of a different force he felt in that space. In the letter, he says, "Not everything is in the light. Beyond the threshold, there are those who watch, who examine, who will not let you enter until you have passed your own." Jung never used the word demon or darkness. He was cautious. But here he writes about entities whose presence made the soul freeze. And it doesn't frighten. It sobers. He realized that returning to Earth was not a punishment, but a chance. He was given a little more time to speak, to prepare, to sow. "I am not a teacher. I am a messenger from the border," he wrote at the end of the letter. And now we come to the most important part. In the final paragraph, written as if by a trembling hand, Jung leaves a hint, not direct, not clear, but if you read closely, there is a secret hidden in the words. He writes, period. If you are reading this, it means you have already heard the call. It is quiet, like breathing in a dream, but unmistakable. And if you do not turn away, you will be guided. Do not be afraid. Do you understand? This is not about Jung. This is about us. Everyone, at some point in life, experiences a moment when reality cracks. Illness, loss, a dream that won't fade, or the feeling that someone is near, even when you're alone. Jung says, this is the invitation, the beginning of the path. The question isn't whether you believe in the otherworldly. The real question is, when it knocks, will you open the door? And now, the final fragment of the letter. It was cut from the main text, attached separately, like a postscript, a small sheet, almost faded. On it, just a few lines. But they are the strongest in the letter. Truth is not knowledge. Truth is a meeting, face to face, without masks, without a name, where everything unnecessary burns away, and only what you have always been remains. And you, the one reading these words now, are you ready for such a meeting? After this letter, Jung never again wrote about what had happened to him. He continued working, wrote books, consulted patients, taught, but somewhere deep inside, he already knew. His true journal was not on paper. It was recorded at the boundary of worlds. When you read this letter, a strange feeling arises, as if it was written for you, not for some scholar, not for a pen pal, but for you, the one who has made it to these words. And then a question emerges, not rhetorical, a real one. What if it's true? What if between this life and what we call death, there really is a thin veil, and beyond it, not darkness, but a blinding light from which you want to turn away because it's too real? Jung saw it, but he didn't want to convince anyone. He simply said, seek for yourself. The path is not in theory. The path is in experience. More than 80 years have passed since then. But has anything changed? Have we become less afraid of death? Have we come to understand who we are more deeply? Or, on the contrary, have we strayed even further from ourselves, lost in screens, in haste, in an endless race for nothing? Jung warned, the time will come, and the veil will begin to thin, and those who are not ready will suffer. Because truth, the kind that frees, first burns. He wrote that the one who has once seen their soul can no longer lie to themselves. They may try, stay silent, hide. But inside, a bell already rings, like the echo of a distant chime, and it cannot be silenced. And now, silence. Because everything has been said. The letter ends, but you can feel it, can't you? This is not the end. This is only the beginning. Because real discoveries are not outside. They are within. Jung merely opened the door. The rest is your path. And if you've read this far...
Okay, well, that was trippy.
Yeah. Amazing. If it didn't say Carl Jung, I probably would never have listened to it. But the fact that they attribute it to him makes it very impressive. And I don't know if it's really him or not, because we don't know, but it was a good letter.
Mm-hmm.
And the good part of the letter is on the information that Jenna gave about the name of the book.
Memories, Dreams, and Reflections.
And there's certain pages that that are address this, and tell them the pages again.
289 to 298. Memories, Dreams, and Reflections, written by Anila Jaffe.
Anyway, it's amazing.
So the letter in its entirety is published in that book. The lost secret 80-year-old letter. That's what they're talking about. Anyways, I think it's an interesting reflection to think about. And you can think about how much did you become yourself as you listen to this next song. Thank you. And welcome back to the Kauai Death Cafe. We were just listening to some Leonard Cohen, his song Hallelujah. Susan was talking about the origin of the word hallelujah. Why don't you share that, Susan? Oh,
I don't know. I heard this, so we don't know if it's true. But I heard that hallelujah has value because it has absolutely no meaning. So like with a mantra, the reason it works supposedly was because you can't attach a thought to it. It's just a sound. And that's what I heard hallelujah was just a sound of celebration without any hidden meaning or even understanding.
It's
pretty cool.
It's funny when you say that, the word hallelujah, where it resonates in your body.
Where does it resonate?
For me, it resonates right in my heart, right in my
heart.
Chest.
Hallelujah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's just a sound, and you can attach whatever you want to it.
It's pretty cool. Thank you, yeah. Leonard Cohen.
Yeah, that's our song to Carl Jung for possibilities.
Yeah. So I liked what he said. How much did you become yourself? When you look back over your life, how much did you become yourself?
Yep.
And then in his relation to truth, truth is not knowledge. It's just absolute recognition. So can you recognize yourself?
And that's the truth.
It was pretty interesting. He chose not to release that letter because he didn't want to be accused of mysticism. So that was not even it was out there, but I wouldn't say it was like religious, or it wasn't that woo-woo, was it?
Well, I don't think it was religious. It was his perception. I'm still not sure if everyone has some variation of that theme, but the fact that he's just such a brilliant man, and the way he described what happened to him was a way I never thought about it. So there's always value.
The parts of that letter that are kind of missing is it was drawn from, he got hurt and then he had cardiac arrest and then his wife died. And so he gleaned a bunch of information out of those experiences in order to sort of compose that, in order to compose that letter.
I thought the letter was about his own personal, what happened to him.
It was all,
actually,
yeah,
physiologically, all those. And the letter itself in that book that we talked about gets really profound, in my opinion, because it goes way, maybe, I think it's like it's the whole letter. And he says some remarkable things, if you're in the mood.
Yep, we're talking about Carl Jung's letter from 80 years ago, written in 1944 after he was hospitalized, having had cardiac arrest. And it wasn't a letter that was published right away because he didn't want to upset the rest of the psychology community, you know, with something that wasn't exactly scientific. But it was interesting. So he basically had a near-death experience and then wrote this letter.
Yep. And the letter itself really goes deeper than this AI voice that we listen to.
Yeah, it's always hard to listen to those AI things and wonder if you're getting real information. So I went around and researched it a little bit before we ran it. So at least Carl Jung did write a letter in 1944. So that's all we know to be true about anything.
Right. All we need to know.
Yeah. Well, we're going to clip to another song. It's I Shall Be Released by Nina Simone. It's an Aaron Neville song, though. But we couldn't find that version, so we're going to play this one.
Well, yeah, it's probably an old spiritual. that a lot of people covered. I don't know its origin, but I love the song.
Well, without further ado, here comes some Nina Simone, I Shall Be Released. Enjoy. So I have a phone call. And our caller's name is Wholesome. She's calling from Colorado. And she wants to talk about grief. She wants to talk about her aunt that passed away. And it's been a while now, so we'll just go ahead and get the story from her. She can tell us a little bit more about what's happening with her. Hold on, let's see if I can get her. Wholesome, are you there? Hey. Hello?
Hi there. How's it going?
Great. How are you?
Well, you know, I'm doing good today. It's good weather out here.
Nice. So you called me yesterday, and I said, oh my gosh, could we have this call on the air? Because the first thing you said was, I was sitting around and I was sad, and I realized that I was finally sad about my aunt. And I think you were sort of surprised at the fact that you were just now getting sad about your aunt because she'd passed a while back. How long ago did she die?
She passed away in October, so I was just, like, kind of shocked that I was upset about it yesterday, because it's been, you know, at least a good 6 months.
Yep.
And it just hit me that she's gone.
Were you doing some, what were you doing when that happened?
I was just working on my schoolwork.
Oh, you were just batted down and buckled down and trying to do something, not think about the grief.
Right. No, I just, it just hit me that she's not here anymore.
Grief seems to be this amazing phenomenon that pops up who knows how long after the experience, because that was my experience too, that I didn't know I was grieving while I was grieving. And it took about 3 months till all of a sudden I went, wow, you have been grieving. And the thoughts and the ideas that came then were from grief. So, you know, you can live through it without even knowing that's running your life. And it seems like that's what happened with you, is like you didn't even know about grief until, like me, you woke up one day and said, oh, this is grief. So anyway, it's amazing.
I was just so busy working with school that I just, it didn't even dawn on me that she's just, I'm never going to see her again.
Right, right.
She is going to be, maybe it is because me and my other sister were talking about her, and she had her body decomposed in a natural way where she's going to be turned into a tree.
Oh, beautiful.
Oh, did you guys compost her?
Well, somebody did, right?
They did. They composted her, and now she's going to be put back into the ground and a tree planted there where she's at.
So, that's really great. That I've heard about that before, and it's another way to rethink what we do with our loved ones' bodies. But what part of the country is this composting place? Because you're in Colorado.
It's in Longmont, Colorado.
Oh.
And it's called Natural Funeral. And what they do is they put like a tag on your toe so they know where you're at. And they have a space, and you can go visit that space, and they decompose you there. And then they grind your bones and return you back to your people.
You get a bag of dirt back.
And or a bunch of bones. That's I'm going to leave my skeleton to Jenna so we can't grind my bones.
Yeah, well, will you help me polish it up?
we'll put it in the museum.
So they put it in a bin, and the bin's got compost in it that helps break down. How does they break down the bodies?
Well, they use like different like worms
enzymes
and stuff,
and
like
worms
that.
And
the same way you would anything else that decomposes. It's a natural persuaded.
So like maggots, virtually, right? Mm-hmm. Like maggots.
Yeah, really. You go back to the natural way that you would decompose, and
cool.
It's kind of nice because you don't have to have a funeral plot. You could have that be somewhere that's actually your own home. And yeah. I think that if you bury more than one person in your yard in the city area, because I live in a very metropolis area.
Oh, yeah.
Of millions of people. And so if you do want to, I think that you could get like a tax break on that part of the land to turn it into
a cemetery.
Or a mausoleum even. Yeah. You know, you could put several family members in that space, and then that space could never be built on.
Wow.
Again,
that's where you get into problems with our Hawaiian bones. You're never supposed to move them or touch them or anything. And then with progress and cities growing and this place growing, they're finding all these bones and it's become an issue.
They're everywhere. ashes are a lot easier.
I did the math recently and I realized that we have 8.2 billion people on the planet. That's and cool. Out of those people that 253,380,000 will die this year.
Oh, my God. Say that number again, 200 and something thousand.
253,380,000.
Wow.
Your stats class is actually paying off. That's even bad at math, Wholesome.
That's amazing. Well, that's good to remember. And nobody knows who's on that list, right?
Nope,
that's just it. And as that number grows, what's kind of nice though is I pay attention to weird things like that. Is that in 2021, that number was 40 million people higher.
Oh,
so that's how many people I take died from COVID.
Wow. So it's actually the number's gone down since we.
It has gone down, and it went down substantially actually. Just a couple years later, in 2023, it was down to 2.98%, which is less.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, you never really know how many people go, but if you look at the numbers, it's all there.
Yeah, right.
That's pretty interesting. Well, I wanted to ask you: do you know the 5 steps of grief? Do you know about that?
Actually, no, I don't.
So denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and then ultimately acceptance. But, it's both.
Yeah, it's and I, and as we said earlier, I make a distinction between death and grief because death's the easy part.
Yeah, it's actually both. They apply that same Elizabeth Kubler-Ross rhetoric towards both.
In hospice?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I want to write my own. Because I don't relate to them when I think about my grief. Well, some of them, not completely. But.
Well, so then to take it a little further, you don't experience all 5 of those at the same time.
Right.
You don't experience them in order. And just because you've experienced one of them doesn't mean that you won't go back and experience it again throughout your process of grieving. But, you know, you could see, you called me from the funeral and you were so upset about your aunt. And the way that they had sort of prepared some things around her. And so that was a part of this grief as well. You were angry, you know? And then when she first went into the hospital, you were in anticipatory grief in the aspect that you were in denial that and you were bargaining, can we do something to fix this?
Okay, you're right.
Yeah. And then
so true.
And then I think right now, as you said, it hit you, you know, you're kind of in the depression phase of it where it made you sad, you know, and it finally was like, whoa, I'm going to be, you know, moving into the summer and she's not there. Because I know you guys would do something in the summer a lot of times, travel somewhere or what have you, you know.
Yeah, she is great.
Mm-hmm. And
she's a really good lady and did a lot for a lot of people. You know, I just want to say that speaking of good people, Willie Nelson was just recently talking about his own death and that if he goes, that he's pretty dang happy. You know, he's lived a good life, and that people should just support Farm Aid, because instead of taking money away from the agricultural businesses and the billions of dollars that they plan on taking away from farmers, that we should be supporting American farmers right now.
He's amazing. That is so important. And that he said it now is, I'm more impressed with him than ever. He's something else.
I like Willie Nelson. Do they still
absolutely
do
agreeable.
The Farm Aid concert? That was always a really good
Yeah, I haven't show. Heard of a Farm Aid concert in years. Did you?
I haven't either.
Oh, he's still at it.
Is he?
And his son, Lucas? His son is quite a musician too, just as good looking. Lucas Nelson.
Cool. Lucas.
Quite the musician.
Well, good looking.
Exactly his dad.
Well, Wholesome, thank you for calling in today.
And yeah, thank awesome. You. I'm so glad we got to talk about the Green Burial. That's really interesting.
And thanks for sharing about your aunt's grief. It sounds like you're making your way down the list, though. You're moving.
Absolutely. And just a real quick thing is my friend Happy Jack, when before he passed, he told me that he goes, it's okay, Wholesome, when I go, because I got mine. Anyway, I hope you all have a lovely day, and I appreciate you having me as a guest on your show.
Thank you, honey. Great. Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
Aloha.
Oh, Happy Jack was something else, man. Happy Jack was the coolest.
What
I forgot
is Happy
about
Jack?
Him. Happy Jack was a cool man that was friends of Wholesome's. And he was in hospice, and he was in the hospital, and she was sneaking him some alcohol in there because that was his thing.
I like her.
Oh, yeah. She's the best.
Very cool. And that was, like, brilliant that whole green thing came up, because mm-hmm. that's one of those things that, of course, we would want to mention
yeah.
sometime in passing, and she just brought the whole thing up.
Yeah, maybe she'll send us some dirt. Wholesome, get us some dirt.
Yes. It crunched up.
We want to see how well it grows as a growing medium.
Yeah.
Well,
not fruit.
I thought maybe we would play Willie Nelson.
Cool.
Because why not? So we got to have a little Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain with Willie. Have a good one. Aloha and welcome back to the Kauai Death Cafe on KKCR. You're in studio with Jenna and Susan, and we just listened to some Willie Nelson, Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain. That's my grandmother's favorite Willie song. Earlier we were listening to a YouTube that was about a letter that Carl Jung wrote seemingly to himself after having cardiac arrest and a stent in the hospital. And we were talking, it talks about the afterlife and the world as he sees it, and maybe what he saw during a near-death experience. And if you'd like to check out a little bit more about that letter, it's in a book called Memories, Dreams, and Reflections of Carl Jung's. The book is written by Anila Jaffe, and it's a compilation of a bunch of his letters and such. And it's on page 289 to 298. You could probably search for it on the internet too. But in tying together the video that we listened to earlier and then talking about grief with my friend Wholesome on the phone just now, this is, to me, this rings on to something that my 14-year-old said, which was, it is a replacement of fear with faith in something, you know? Jung seems to be trying to understand what the truth is, you know? And that's, truth is plural. So you're never going to get to the end of that. And he was saying that experience is where knowledge is gleaned from. And so with every step that we take and all of the grief that we have, those are the experiences that tell us what is true for us and everybody else. And it's never the same truth. We all do not have the same truth, even if we go through the same incident with each other. So I think it's very interesting. And very
variations
beautiful.
On the truth is what it becomes.
Truths.
Yeah. Without enough S's.
Without enough S's.
8 billion. I know. I thought we were, I forgot and stopped at 8, at 7 billion humans, and she said there was 8 point something
I
already.
I mean, yeah.
In a blink of an eye.
She's failing statistics, so those numbers might be off a bit, but they sounded pretty good.
She is. She's taking statistics and failing?
She failed it once.
Oh. Okay.
She's retaking it right now, though, so. Those are gonna, that's good.
She knows.
She's got to practice.
And she's got statistics down, so.
Hey, I didn't realize that those were some big numbers, man.
A billion more than the last time I checked.
A billion is so much more than a million.
Duh.
It's really hard to even look at it.
Yeah, who can picture?
Not me. Well, I hope everyone had a soulful Sunday. As you're driving home from church, we're on next time, the 25th of March, or I'm sorry, of May. That'll be the fourth Sunday. And then we'll follow up with the following first Sunday of June. So we hope you'll tune in to KKCR and listen to us, the Kauai Death Cafe. Jenna and Susan, got anything, Susan?
Call us or text us with ideas and thoughts and everything, because we really do want this to be for the community. So we'd love to hear from you and whatever your thoughts are, because there's 8 billion of us and we want to hear from you.
Yeah. 8 billion of you. Well, thank you so much and have a great Sunday, and we'll be here again on the 25th of May.
Aloha.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.